We're going to resume our session. Next speaker is Josh Padilla. He's going to present about using the portable XRF to measure trace elements.
All right, well, good morning, everybody. I'm Josh Padilla. I'm a master's student at LSU, and I'll be speaking about portable X-ray fluorescence and the effect of soil moisture and sample thickness. So there are several applications for PXRF. This list is by no means exhaustive. So the first method ever published was an EPA method for detecting lead in paint. It's also used for determining the composition of various industrial alloys, mineral exploration and mining applications, as well as determining various contaminants in toys and other consumer goods. And for the interest of probably most of us in here, environmental evaluations. So traditional site characteristic or characterizing techniques is, you know, you have pretty time and labor intensive sampling, take the samples back to the lab, usually, you know, do an acid digestion and run them on ICP. But for the XRF, all this is, there's no taking samples, it's in situ analysis, which is really nice, and it's rapid sampling. You can generate a lot of data and then use those results to kind of concentrate your effort for, you know, your more quantitative analysis where you go and take samples and do the ICP stuff. However, there are some definite limitations. Soil moisture is one of those that's been pretty well documented in the literature. There's been several correction methods proposed. I have, again, this is not an exhaustive list, but here's some examples. And then this manuscript by Parsons et al., it kind of summarizes the effect really nicely. With every 1% increase in moisture, you have about 1.15 to 1.75 reduction in your analyte concentration. However, the instrument that we're using in this study, they say that their constant normalization calibration method can correct for these the effect of soil moisture. And there's really not a whole lot in the literature that lends credence to that claim. So, you know, people are spending $1,000s on the instruments. They're very well used or very widely used. So we have to evaluate this claim whether or not Compton normalization can actually correct for soil moisture. And then there's several different U.S. and international methods for PXRF. The most commonly cited one here in the U.S. is EPA method 6200. But again, in these methods, they don't really have guidance for sample thickness. Like, for example, in 6200, they say, oh, use this, you know, specific sampling cup, fill it up to a certain amount, and then analyze it from there. But they don't actually say, like, what the depth that you need. And there is some studies in the literature where people have looked at thickness. Parsons et al. Looked at a mass as a proxy for thickness. But again, he didn't relate this to, like, an ideal or minimum thickness that you need. And then using a large benchtop instrument, Imanishi et al. Figured, recommended about 10 millimeter minimum thickness. So we're also going to kind of validate that claim and then hopefully kind of add to or add supplemental information to these methods. So goals of the current study, I kind of just went over these, but again, we're looking in a systematic way, evaluating the soil moisture and sample thickness. And more specifically, we really want to evaluate the efficacy of the Compton normalization method. Because like I said, there's not really a whole lot in the literature that like says that it can correct for soil moisture. And then evaluate sample thickness to, again, you know, provide some sort of supplemental information to these widely used XRF methods. So just a brief overview of our methods here. We're looking at three different matrices. We have a mixture of glass beads. We have a Windsor loamy sand and then a Webster silt loam. And so we spike these with concentrations of nickel, zinc, lead, and cadmium, so where our final concentration is 200 ppm. And then, so for soil moisture, we have the dry spike samples. We spread them evenly into a tray. And then we apply water at 90% of the calculated pore space. And then what we did was we're taking samples as these samples dried, so to kind of like cover a range of soil moistures. And then for sample thickness, we did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, and 20 millimeter thicknesses on top of an acrylic platform. And the instrument that we're using is a Delta Dynamic DP4000 from, again, Innovex Systems. And we use their proprietary three-beam soil mode for 135 second total read times. And then, of course, we use the Compton normalization calibration. And then for statistics, we did a Tukey pairwise comparison at a 90% confidence level. So our results for soil moisture, you can see here that as your soil moisture increases, we have a decrease in our measured concentration for all of our elements. And it's very highly correlated with the energy of the characteristic fluorescence generated by each of the elements. So, for example, nickel, which generates like the lowest energy fluorescence, is more greatly affected by the soil moisture as compared to cadmium, which creates the highest energy fluorescence. In one of our soils, over our range of soil moisture contents, it didn't even have any statistical difference. So I want to bring your attention to these two points. This guy right here, zinc and nickel, in our Windsor soil. And we saw these like, oh, that doesn't really make sense because, you know, it's well above what what should be in there. So we figured in this particular case, there's some sort of redistribution of these elements in this soil. And so we did a really simple study where we have a 5 centimeter thick ring that we filled with this soil, and we took measurements from the top and the bottom before and after we applied the water and allowed it to dry. And so this graph down here is after the sample had dried, and as you can see, you know, you have depletion at the bottom of the sample for these two elements, enrichment at the top, and then for cadmium and lead there was no statistical difference right there. Okay. So for sample thickness, it's kind of what you expect. You have, as your sample thickness increases, you have an increasing measured concentration until it kind of asymptotes out at a constant value. And then again, this effect was very dependent on the energy of the characteristic fluorescence. Nickel, which generates the lowest energy, reached a constant value at 3 millimeters in all three of our matrices. And then cadmium, which produces the highest level, was, you know, at 5, 5, and then 10. So the reason this is it's kind of twofold. So there's a certain thickness or a certain depth that the incident X-rays can actually penetrate. And then the radiation generated by each one of these elements can only, you know, at some point the thickness above them will completely absorb their emitted fluorescence. So looking at these results, we kind of agree with that previous study by Imanishi. So the 10 millimeter thickness is what we're going to recommend. So if you can account for a range of different characteristic energy of characteristic fluorescence, and what you're looking at. So conclusion and recommendations for our moisture content. Again, the magnitude of the effect is very dependent upon the energy of the characteristic fluorescence. And then there's an inverse relationship between water content and our measured concentrations despite the use of the Compton normalization calibration method, which is what we expect. There's a ton of evidence in the literature saying that soil moisture is a big deal and nothing that says that this calibration method can actually account for soil moisture. It might be able to account for maybe chemical differences between different soils, but it can't account for the absorption of emitted X-rays by the soil moisture component. And then in terms of in-situ sampling out in the field, you know, you're never going to go to a field site where it's a completely homogeneous distribution of soil moisture. So we say rather than like really trying to correct each measurement for the individual soil moistures at each point you measure, it might be useful just for a screening level, more of a qualitative sort of thing, rather than the in-depth quantification. And then, of course, it's no replacement for a laboratory analysis. So you need to do, you know, something like ICP or something to get like a really good concrete number. And then for sample thickness, like I said again, energy of the characteristic fluorescence is really the big thing that affects the magnitude of the effective soil thickness. And then, you know, as we saw, the measured concentrations increase until you asymptote at a constant value. And we agree with the recommendation with Amnichi for the 10 millimeter thickness. And for in terms of the in situ analysis out in the field, these things measure, you know, concentrations at or very near the surface. So if you want to get a vertical distribution, you know, you have to actually go in there and maybe dig a pit or something like that. So with that, thank you for your time, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
We have time for questions.
On the graph that showed us thickness, the difference between 5 and 10 didn't look that much. So there's statistical difference between 5 and 10 millimeters.
Are you talking about the for cadmium specifically?
Actually, I was looking mainly at the lead plots.
Oh, the lead plots? Yes, there's a... Well, for lead, there was not. There was statistical difference stopped happening at 5 millimeters.
Okay, yeah. Just because the way it looked, it looked there was a huge difference.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I might miss it, but when you were changing the thickness, did you account for density differences and make sure that you had consistent density when changing thickness?
Well, we want to make sure that was kind of compacted to the same degree each time. We didn't really like make a like really concerted effort to account for the density, but yeah, we compacted it to the same degree each time. On liquids, no, we haven't. That would be really interesting, though.
All right, thank you very much.